RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Tennille Murdoch has been a primary school teacher since 2000. She's taught in a number of schools around the world. She also taught at the Gifted Education Centre before it was called Mind Plus, and so had experience with one-day schools. With her husband, Gavin, they set out to start the Forest School back in 2016. Tennille met with the Ministry of Education to argue the case for the right of any child to attend alternative education regardless of their learning style or neurodiversity. That's how this husband and wife team started. Gavin has an interesting background also as a qualified teacher, physiotherapist, outdoor instructor, lifeguard, and professional sailor. So with their combined expertise and another seven people on the team who are a mix of full and part-time, they have paved the way for nature-based learning here in New Zealand. Their youngest son was struggling in mainstream, and this was the real motivator. Tennille, too, was becoming disillusioned with the system. She left her mainstream teaching job, pulled their son out of school, and began the Forest School with him and about five other kids from other homeschooling families. Within 6 months, Gavin left his job in mainstream, and, well, we'll find out what happened after that. Tennille and Gavin Murdoch are both with us now. Thank you for coming on, you two.
Oh, thanks so much, Paul, for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's nice to talk.
It's great for you to have a really common thing, commonality on this, isn't it? Yeah. Was that a random thing?
The husband and wife duo.
Both in this together on, and we're going to find out about Forest Schools. It just seems that, I've never met anyone who knows anything about Forest Schools before. Put it that way.
Well, we do have slightly different backgrounds, but I think the combination of our skills and talents and probably a shared love for just children and bringing the best out in them probably is a good combination for what we do now. But we did start a lot further apart.
Yeah. Only recent years that we started working together. So,
cool.
Yeah, works.
Okay. I know what a forest is. I know what a school is. What is a forest school? You need to tell us what that is exactly first. Is it going to be?
All right. I will answer that question. So a forest school is an outdoor learning centre or an outdoor classroom where children come regularly, ideally on weekly occasions, to learn in and from nature. So rather than just a one-off outdoor education experience, which is what we historically know happens in New Zealand, we created an independent school where children can go for weekly attendance that complements really the other 4 days that they attend in mainstream school.
Yeah. Okay. How did you find out about it? Was it your idea or was there a path that led you to this? Tell us.
Yeah, so the model, the one-day school model, we started in 2016. So there have been forest schools around the world happening and operating since the 1950s, over in Scandinavia and then also sort of in the UK and the US. They have been going for about 20 or 30 years, but nothing was really happening here in New Zealand. Other than our typical outdoor education style camps and things that Kiwis do.
Which is once or twice a year? I remember my kids used to go to there was a camp they used to run every year, but it was a couple of weeks. That was all pretty well.
And maybe only in year six and maybe only in like year eight, you know, or year 12 and 13. So there's not, considering the beautiful environment that we have here in New Zealand, we weren't utilising it or offering it to children as part of a platform for learning. So so we sort of identified that about 8 years ago and decided to create something that really just inspired children because for me as a primary school teacher, I saw that there were lots of children that weren't thriving in mainstream schooling.
That's sad, isn't it?
Very, yep. It is a real shame because we aren't all cookie cutters, as you know, and we've got to try and find the right place that meets the needs of each unique child. So we set out to create a one-day school. So rather than a full primary school, operating in the bush or in the forest, because of my experience in gifted education and teaching in one day schools.
What's gifted in education? I think I know what it is, but what is it? What is
so one day schools originally started in the 90s for children who are gifted, so that they could have extension learning outside of their current classroom setting once a week. So they would do 4 days at regular school and then 1 day at their gifted education centre. And so that's been going since the 90s as a provision for children who need a little bit more than what's happening in the regular classroom. And so I knew that that existed, and I knew that there was provision for that in the Education Act. But my big argument when I started my conversation with the ministry was, why is this only available for gifted learners?
What was the answer?
Well, they had questions about that too. I met some really supportive people in the ministry, and then others that were not so in favour of what I was trying to do. But we just wanted to create a space where any child could attend an alternative setting, regardless of what their neurodiversity was or learning preference or style was.
So I'm hearing that term all the time now, neurodiversity, and it wasn't long ago I'd never heard it.
Oh, it's definitely a buzzword now. I mean, it has always been for teachers, but it's a hot topic at the moment. But now we, at the time, our youngest son, who was 5.
Was he gifted?
He would be classified as neurodiverse. He has ADHD, dyslexia, dysgraphia, a whole range of different things, and he has come out as being gifted too, which is in your twice exceptional category. Yeah. So when you have children who just think outside the box and see the world in a different way.
Yeah, it must be so restraining to be sort of like hemmed in like that in a classroom, is it? It must be.
And it can really, really affect self-esteem and, just how children view themselves. And when you see 5, 7 and 8-year-olds seeing themselves as not capable or as not worthy, you want to do something different.
When they are, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why we wanted to create another choice for parents.
You know, a lot of kids just need to move. And when they're in a classroom, there just isn't the opportunity to move around as much as they want to. And so their urges get the better of them. And that's a struggle for the teachers who have, you know, quite a few children to manage in the class, because that moving around and a bit of excitement and things isn't always what the teacher wants to be going.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So that just the outdoor space really works well for a lot of those children. They are able to move, and if they've got an urge to run around or who knows what, it's usually appropriate, and there's a space where they can meet that urge and need, and then they can be in a much better place ready to learn.
Well, children aren't just little, like, brains running around. Like, they are physical, they are social, they are emotional little beings that, you know, all of their needs must be met in education, not just their cognitive abilities. So if you think about the child as a whole person and you think about every element that makes a human human, you want to cover all those things and meet all of those needs, not just the academics, because we are more than that as people.
Would it be fair to say that the majority of school kids, and who are we talking about age-wise here? We're talking right up to where school ends, or
our program's for 5 to 12-year-olds, but we're not really hard and fast with that, because of course we're talking stage. Every child's at a different stage versus a chronological age, so we're kind of a little bit flexible. Children starting 4.5 roughly if they are ready, and then at the other end we've got some children who are sort of 13 and 14 who are still really benefiting from what we do. So
I was lucky. I'm not trying to make it about me, but it makes me remember my school days and how we were educated. It was a lot of time in the classroom, but we were lucky. We had hills behind us with endless tracks, and we could go up there and we did all the time. We built forts. We did the whole thing. But I can imagine probably the majority of kids, particularly in city schools, and that's the majority of the population, hardly ever get to experience anything beyond what the block, the city streets or the suburban streets, and have not much of a concept of how it feels to be in the bigger picture world. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Paul, I've got some of those kinds of memories as well from my primary school in West Auckland, escaping school down into the bush, down the back of school.
And you know, all the tracks, all the shortcuts, you knock yourself out for the whole day. Yep.
Yeah, and I still have those memories. They're still strong memories for me because I think about it regularly with what we do. And so it is bringing that part of your childhood alive and giving it space so that children can have those experiences. And, you know, I think houses are getting smaller and children might go outside to play and there's no one in the street because the rest of the kids are playing Minecraft or Roblox or whatever they're playing at the moment. But when we went outside when we were kids, the sections were bigger. There was more people out playing and there weren't devices that, you know, that you're competing with your friends for their attention. So there's been a shift away from just children being kids and playing around the streets after school, getting into the bush. I think it's not that it doesn't happen at all, but I think, you know, I'm in my 40s. It happened a lot more when I was a kid growing up in the suburbs than that I see now or that people report to me.
But parents also want to provide that to their children, and parents are, you know, nowadays are quite busy. Both parents have to work. They do have those fond memories.
Yeah, like mum was at home for me all the time. Yeah,
and so they many parents do want their children just to have their childhood, you know, and have memories similar to what you've just described, because it's not possible for them to just give that to them like it was easy for our parents to give to us, perhaps.
Yeah. So what's it like watching the kids sort of like run out into the forest school and burn some energy up and start looking
it's
at
not
things?
Chaos.
And
it's not like dropping a bag of marbles on.
No.
Yeah.
Scatter in the mornings. We do have a daily rhythm and a routine that the children are really like they know what to expect every day, and we have a routine like any other school. However, ours is it incorporates a lot more free play and longer amounts of time for free play. So we kind of talk about the forest school being child led but within an adult sort of structured environment. So our daily rhythm is structured and it doesn't change. You know, children arrive. We've got a very flexible rolling arrival just to cater for the parents that are travelling from the other side of Auckland to get to us. And then we sort of start with a korero in the morning. Kids meet and greet, talk about what's on the learning menu, feed the farm animals. We've got pigs and chickens and a school dog and things like that.
Yep.
Play a bit of a game. And then, our learning menu starts at approximately 10, and that's from 10 till 12, and there's a whole range of different invitations for the children. So rather than typically in school you would have have lots of teacher-directed activities, we don't have those. We have invitations set up where children can opt into the different types of experiences that are on offer. Some of those are set out because of the observations that we've made from the week before about what's interesting, what the children have observed or discussed or mentioned, so that helps us plan for the week following. And then also the other invitations come directly from the children. So it could be that someone's bought some pipes and some funnels and they want to build a dam.
Sounds like fun already.
Yeah. Mm. So there's a whole range of different things that happen during that sort of 10 till 12 midday time.
Yeah, interesting language you're using there. Invitations, menu. It's not, it doesn't feel like, you know, imposed top down necessarily. Though it kind of is because you're setting the structure, but.
Yeah, we are setting the structure, but that's to keep them safe and just to give them security about what's going on in their day. But they still feel that they are playing all day and they do not realise how much they're learning and how deeply they are learning through that play.
So what are they learning?
I mean,
there'll be the obvious things, but what are they truly learning?
I think the thing that we see most is the joy in the day. Like the children are just happy the entire day. Like there's no disengagement.
No discipline problems.
Very few. But our job is to get alongside them and just, you know, facilitate and coach them socially if there are some, you know, social conflicts and things like that. But we do, sorry, this distracted me.
Oh, sorry.
But back to your question, what are they?
Yeah.
Lots of life skills that you would hope your children learn at regular school, perhaps, or just in you know, interactions with other people, such as like their like creative problem solving, you know, critical thinking, all those key competencies that are within the New Zealand curriculum, relating to others, just all their social emotional skills that you hope your children develop, but are actually lagging in some kids right now because they haven't had as many opportunities to problem solve through social, you know, social conflicts and things like that. So we do a lot of coaching around that type of thing. There are skills that we do support children to learn too, like technical skills occasionally, like knot tying or learning to use tools. Because
we used to do that in Scouts.
Yeah.
But yeah, the workshop.
I can still remember a few. Okay.
Yeah. No, we do. We do knots, and there's a lot of structure with knots because there's a right way and a wrong way to tie a knot. So although they get choice, you can't choose. Well, you can choose how to tie a knot, but one's going to work and one's not.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's structure around the way that we use tools as well. There's they get tool licenses, and there's 10 different tools that they can
licenses. Did you say?
Yeah. And well, we call them tool licenses because, you know, it is a way of getting some feedback, extrinsic feedback. Do I have what it takes to use a hammer, to use a saw? Today we
were. It's like a qualification, is it?
Yeah. I don't think you'd take it to a job interview, but it is.
But it keeps the motivation going, right?
It does. And some of them are really motivated to learn the skills to use those tools, and they perhaps wouldn't be if those tool licenses didn't exist. So if they're extrinsically motivated by things that they can see and touch and feel and be rewarded with, that's a great driver for some of them.
But the workshop is still set up as a free play type setting. So even though there's these licenses that they need to earn before they can safely use those independently, it's still an option. Not every child has to do that. They will opt into it if they choose to. But yeah, that's kind of a little bit of what they're learning. Other than that, it's the resilience, it's the, you know.
I like that word.
Confidence, it's the grit that they are going to need through the rest of their life. I mean, yesterday was a great example of resilience and grit just with the hailstorms and things.
Yeah.
And they absolutely smashed it. It was just amazing to see how.
Oh, were you out in it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. That would have been exhilarating.
we had a couple of children who were a little bit apprehensive at first, but then we talked through what that means and what we do if it is if it does get to an unsafe point, you know, if it is too heavy or if, for example, the thunder and lightning is too close to us, then we do have safety measures where we do bring the children, of course, out of the forest and into the cabin for shelter. But if it's safe, you know, hail's not going to kill
them. No, unless they're golf ball size, and it's pretty rare.
We had cashew nuts yesterday at one point. But
okay. Oh, that's I'm getting up there. All right. That sounds really cool. Now, a couple of sort of business related here. In terms of, I mean, obviously you think it's successful, what you do works. Are you able to feed that back in any meaningful way that it gets noticed and even incorporated, at least in the thinking, in the institutions of education? Because I think, you know, here at RCR, we've talked about kind of reinventing the health system. Resilience is everything, you know, alternative systems of doing things, because a lot of us aren't happy with how it is present day. And this sounds like it's kind of in the education space, kind of in there. Is anyone listening? Is anyone, because there's a lot of pushback, a lot of resistance to the status quo, I would imagine. And this sounds fantastic to me. I mean, it's like a great childhood. What sort of conversations are you having and how are they being received?
We've got great support from local teachers and principals, but then we've also got some local teachers and principals who don't agree with this philosophy. So we're always going to have a mixed bag. The Ministry of Education do refer some children to us, and we're grateful for that, and we do have support from a number of people in the ministry. Often it's the children who are completely disengaged or not attending mainstream school that they refer. They don't fit anywhere else. And so we are a safe space for them to engage children. And they do really thrive, which is beautiful. So we are having really positive conversations all the time. But again, we are solely parent funded. There's no provision for the state at the moment to fund what we do, which would actually mean greater access for more families. It's unfortunately only the parents that can afford the private fees each week for their.
That's a bit sad, isn't it? That it's
it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And that's probably the hardest thing, is that it isn't accessible to everybody. It's a real shame, and it should be, because I mean, we've got the environment in the whole country for this to happen.
Yeah, we've got a perfect greatest hits of nature here. To do this at scale, is it doable? Like big scale?
Absolutely. It definitely is doable. Absolutely. I mean, there are some amazing people who have mimicked what we started back in 2016, and there's probably between 20 and 30, that's just a guess, one-day schools who have popped up independently around the country, which is fantastic. But everyone's their own little silo organisation, and everybody's got a different flavour of how they deliver this type of nature-based learning. But to do it, to scale it up and to allow this to be accessible to every child in New Zealand, absolutely doable. It just needs the right people in the right room at the right time, speaking the same language.
And believers.
Yeah. And it's
because you could section off one day a week or a fortnight, couldn't you, as a kind of scheduled thing, so it becomes the norm. It's just transportation in the end, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And many schools actually have a bush block on site, but they're just not using it. Or it's only, you know, a K down the road if they need to transport children. That weekly regular connection to the environment is absolutely life-changing for children. Like, we just see how engaged and how caring they are toward living things, the birds, the trees, the everything, and that's what we want to, you know, set up.
We'd have a better world, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's not about indoctrination of certain ideas. I think it is so much about the children having that genuine connection.
So Gav, it's not a green kind of driven.
Not at all.
No, it's,
people might think we're greenies, but we're...
Well, and we are to a degree, but there's just exploration, I love surfing and sailing and swimming in the ocean and the forest and all of those things. But I love it because I grew up experiencing those things, and it means a lot to me in my life and in my recreation. So there's another generation that are coming up behind us, and if they don't love it, they're not going to look after it the way.
Well, they're not connected, are they? This is the thing. If you're not connected with the natural world or have an experience of it, okay, you might not be able to live in it 24/7, but you really don't kind of connect to anything, do you?
That's right.
And we want healthy young people, you know, we want physically healthy, mentally healthy. We just want really well-rounded, grounded people in, you know, growing up. And we feel that this is a great way to do that.
If folks are listening and are thinking, I could organise that in my area or something, I don't know how you go about that, but to make it bigger, wider, is there some training that's involved? Is there some sort of course or something that you can go through to learn about it and sort of get ready to get started? Can you help people out there?
Yeah, there are. We don't personally do professional development or training. That's just a whole nother business in itself. But there are a couple of people in New Zealand who are providing professional development and training. So Celia Hogan at Little Kiwis Nature Play, she would be a great person to contact. She's got some great courses on offer, which is different to the professional development that you might get from the UK, as an example. There's also Kathy Broadhead, who runs Nature Library, which is another one. She offers professional development and courses, training in this type of nature-based learning. But for us, we did do our training with Forest Schools Education in the UK back in 2018. And we brought Sarah Blackwell over to New Zealand, and she, I think we had about 20 people on the course back then. So there are a number of accredited Forest Schools teachers in New Zealand already. And so there are international programs available too.
Yeah. Okay. Could take off. Could take. Well, people are looking for things now, but more than ever, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, absolutely after, I was going to say a bad word then, but.
Yeah, we'd have to beep it. You know,
there was lockdown for a few years, and for children, if you're 5 years old now and you've spent 18 months or 2 years in lockdown, that's 40% of your life and 40% of your social development that you've missed out on. And so we are seeing. True. We're seeing families that are really looking for the kind of thing that we have, because there is an emphasis on social development and emphasis on spending time outdoors and with people and nature and developing all of the skills, all of the life skills that go along with it, that a lot of children just simply missed out on because of the nature of that.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we think of it as only a short period of time, but when you measure it like that, it's half the time that everyone has in their life for that gone. That's significant, right? That's
For a young person,
it's critical. Yeah, and I've spoken to parents whose children are coming up to five now, and they're saying things like, "Well, this child, she or he, was in that generation where everyone was wearing masks, so their speech was just came on later than the brothers and sisters."
Oh, so that's a noticeable thing.
Yeah, at the time. Yeah. And so there's not a mother's face for them to look, because mum's talking to their babies all the time, and that's how they learn how you move your face, how to learn expressions. And parents are noticing a gap between siblings even. Oh, this is one example. But it's really significant in a lot of ways. I think a lot of ways that haven't been measured yet as well.
Boy, that makes my blood boil.
I mean, even for our 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds that are with us, you know, the levels of anxiety that children are experiencing, the number of children that we have here who are on antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds and mood stabilizers and things like that is just, it's phenomenal. And I'm not saying that that's all of our children, but it is a handful. And you know, I think that that time that we went through of being restricted and locked inside has a huge, that's, you know, that's what I think, you know, it's got to answer for a lot of that.
But look, we're doing our best to provide an antidote, you know, to catch on what that was for a lot of people.
Yeah, I didn't obey the lockdowns, just so you know. I thought this is BS. And what did I get? I got to run down Queen Street from Karanga Happy Road to the ferry building in the middle of the road without one car. I thought I'd never be able to do that again. So I took full advantage of it. Okay, if people want to know more, do they contact you? I mean, obviously people in your area, you can.
Anyone in Auckland can come. We're not zoned. Yep. We have children that drive from every part of Auckland to get to us. So they can contact us at any time if they want their children to attend once a week. Our website is theforestschool.co.nz.
Yep.
And they can call or email at any point. Just pop in and say hi and, visit, try a day.
Yeah, try it out. Can I come?
You sure
I want to build that little dam with the pipes.
Oh, I was building dams today. It was fantastic. And then we loaded the wall and...
Nothing like a dam, eh?
It's funny that you say that, Paul, though, because a lot of parents and even grandparents come in. They walk and have a look around and go, what do you do for parents? What do you do for adults? So there's that innate need or that appreciation for nature and playing.
But that example is real life learning in action. You know, like they're learning about.
Well, it's engineering.
It's engineering. It's physics. you know, it's just really rich, engaging.
Those are the hydropower generating specialists of the future right there.
Oh, 100%.
We've got a few plumber dads and they are very excited that their sons are building brilliant. And breaking dams and connecting pipes.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Hey, it's been great chatting with you both, Tennille and Gavin Murdoch. I think it's a fantastic thing, and I reckon our listeners think that too. I wish you all the best, and it would be so great if it could just grow and expand, you know?
Oh, it would be amazing. Yeah. It really would be.
Yeah, we see really a lot of good things happening for children.
Because I would imagine, sorry to jump in, but
no,
they talk about these boot camps and everything. It's for older kids. You wouldn't need those, actually, if you did this stuff early on, would you, really?
We're trying to be the fence at the top rather than the ambulance at the bottom of the hill for kids. You know, if we can support kids to see that they are, you know, capable, confident individuals that have lots to contribute to the world. Like that's what we want as parents, for our children just to find the thing that they're good at, that they love, and pursue that. So if we can be that space for them, then we're doing
cool.
Well.
They're doing great. The website, one more time.
Theforestschool.co.nz. So just theforestschool.co.nz.
Tennille and Gavin, thanks for coming on RCR.
Thank you, Paul.
You are welcome. Thank you so much for having us, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.